Stay up to date on the green and gold all season. The Green and Gold Fix podcast is brought to you by Pottawatomie Casino Hotel. Luxury stay, elite play, unwind in sophisticated comfort. Win big, dine, and experience the events in Milwaukee.
Joining us now on the Yuengling guest hotline, Yuengling, the oldest brewery in America and now officially in Wisconsin, family owned and operated for six generations, DJ Yuengling and Son, Pottsville, PA, enjoy responsibly. This is going to be, and I don't even know if we're going to talk about, you know, pumpkin pie and whatever else, this is going to be the weirdest time that we've ever talked to Mel Kiper. This is going to be the strangest one because the Packers don't have a first-round pick. He's been nice enough to come on this show basically every year, get us ready for the draft, and I don't even know what the hell to ask him. Can't wait to get his insights into the second-round talents in this year's draft because that's when the Packers are picking. It is Mel Kiper on Wilde and Tausch. Mel, how are you, my friend?
I am good. It's closing in. Less than 2 weeks away. So, like I say, time's a ticking. Got a mock draft coming out next week. Rankings board's got to be finished by the following week. So it's crunch time, basically, to get this all finished.
So it is very strange for us. And we were talking earlier this week, Tausch and I were, about the fact that the draft kind of crept up on us. Not because, I mean, it was in Green Bay. They drafted a wide receiver. It was everything that this year's draft isn't for Packers fans after Goody traded this year's and next year's first-round picks to Dallas in the Micah Parsons trade. How do you view where the Packers are as you are getting ready with your big board and everything else, and you're thinking about their team and their needs and their strategy?
Just stay healthy. That's all I think about. I was thinking about the Packers. We were talking the other day about different teams and the football and injuries. And just if you can get some luck on the injury front, you have a chance to go as far as anybody goes. It's that's what these teams all are really built for going into the year. And then you see it just all come apart because of injuries, particularly offensive line with some teams. But you lose like a Parsons, a great player. You can't have that. And that's what football, unfortunately, is about injury. That's why I always tell everybody, don't get excited. I don't get excited about 8 games in, 12 games in. I only get excited when the Super Bowl's over and we won it. That's when I get excited. I don't celebrate any time during the year because, you know, the next week they play that game and things could happen and all of a sudden your team's completely different than it was. And all of a sudden, you know, what you hoped you would achieve is not going to happen anymore. So I look at these teams if on paper, they're as good as anybody on paper. But they got to have their guys out there and they got to be healthy.
Mel, when we get ready for a draft like this, it is strange for us. It hasn't been since 1986, which you were just a young buck starting out as a what you would become when it comes to the NFL draft. But that was the last time the Packers went into a draft without a first-round pick. There have been years where they didn't end up taking someone in the first round because they traded back. But give us the lowdown on the second round talents. What do you see on your board when you pair that up with the Packers' needs at corner, on the offensive line, on the defensive line, running back? How do you kind of view that second round board as the Packers' first pick is scheduled to be at 52?
That's a good one because I've been trying to figure that out with the second round mock draft come. I do a round one and a round two, and you look at where we are right now at corner. Couple guys, Avion Terrell, you thought would be maybe a one. It looks like he's going to be a two. D'Angelo Pons, he'd be a one if it wasn't for size, but he ran 4.31. He had a great career both at JMU and Indiana. D'Angelo Pons, second round type of guy. So I think Malik Muhammad, if he could be a little more consistent coming out of Texas, be a heck of a player. Does Brandon Cisse from South Carolina drop into the second? There's a Chris Johnson from San Diego State drop into the second. You know, Colton Hood, Tennessee. There's only two lock first-round corners. That's McCoy and Delane. after that, there's going to be another couple going. Who are they going to be? Could be Hood, could be Cisse, could be Johnson. I don't think Terrell. I think he's more of a two, as I said. So if you can get a Terrell or a Pond, somebody like that, to slide down, you could be in good shape. Running back-wise, does Jadarian Price get into the mid-second, late second? Does that happen with Price coming out of Notre Dame? Mike Washington Jr. from Arkansas is red hot right now. And then there's a drop-off into a bunch of third, fourth, fifth-round running backs. So there's really only going to be Love, Price in the second, Washington probably in the third, and then after that, Emmett Johnson, Nebraska, you got Catron Allen, you got Jonah Coleman, but they're all maybe fourth rounders. So I bet you going into day three, we've only had three running backs taken. And that's it, maybe four, but I think that's stretching it. It would be Love, Price, and probably Washington, and that's it.
So, Mel, obviously I love talking offensive line. How do you see this class, and then is there somebody, especially on the interior, a center or
right.
guards, that Green Bay could be somebody that could fall, although we've seen and lately everybody is really appreciating the O-line. You're seeing more and more first-round picks getting taken even on interior guys.
Yeah, that's a good way. I think the guys that I think you would look at there that have that kind of versatility to do both, I think you'll like Trey Zune III was a left tackle at Texas A&M, projecting him to guard center. So he's probably a third-round type of guy. But if you're looking second round right now in terms of an interior offensive lineman, it has some Sam Heck from Kansas State would be one. I'm a big, as far as centers go, Logan Jones from Iowa. Kirk Ferentz coaches those guys up. We know that's his forte as the O-line. Loves this kid. Brian Parker II from Duke's an interesting guy. Probably third, fourth round. Played tackle, can be guard center as well. A guy I like as a pure guard, I know Iwane from Penn State's going to go in the first, and everybody talks up Basantis and Keelan Rutledge from Georgia Tech. I like Emmanuel Pregnon from Oregon. I mean, that kid gets after it. I mean, he is a tough, aggressive, hard-nosed football player. Will just root you out of there. Good player. I like him a lot. Jennings Dunker from Iowa, another Iowa Hawk guy. And guess what? You can't go wrong. Remember Marshall Yanda, third-round pick to the Baltimore Ravens? Mm-hmm. Jennings Dunker is a very similar guy. Tackle, probably be a tackle guard, maybe if the defensive he's overmatched a tackle, can move inside the guard. Jennings Dunker from Iowa in the second round, at worst the early third round, is one of those guys that's going to play a long time in the league. And he comes in, people aren't going to go crazy, say, well, he's a first. I was even thinking maybe first round when I watched him play this year at Iowa. I said, nah, he's going to get into the second. Jennings Dunker, just because of it's Iowa, and it's Kirk Ferentz, and this kid loves to play the game, and he has that ability to be a tackle or right tackle or guard. That's the kind of kid in the second or even third round. If you get him, you know you're going to have a guy that's going to start and play a lot of years in the NFL.
Mel, how are talent evaluators taking in the portal, and how many guys are going to different places? And I know I talked to a couple folks last year that the money component, you typically don't have to worry about that. In the old days, you'd have to worry about it when you'd give guys second contracts. How much of that goes into the evaluation process when they're taking a look at these guys?
Well, I asked that question to some people. I think they're trying to get into, you know, who really loves the game, who has the money already. Now you've got guys that have already secured, you know, from a financial standpoint, a pretty good chunk of money. So, I mean, just by that, I mean, there was talk about, you know, Ty Simpson, if he'd have moved on from Alabama, could have got maybe $6 million. You're talking about a lot of money being paid to these players now. And some of them are even just moving on. Like Ty moved on to the NFL, could have gotten a lot of money to go three different places that the rumor mill has it. So at the end of the day, I think you have to look at, you know, how much coming into the league, it gets back to, and Mark knows this, it's that who loves this game? And who's playing the game because they can? Who plays the game because they just want to and they love it? These guys are all good enough to play the game. But then when you get to the NFL, that's not enough. And you can get by in college with that, no problem. But in the NFL, it still gets back to trying to figure out that intangible part of it. And with the NIL, it's even more important now because these guys come into the league. They think they're already professionals. They're getting paid. They're doing commercials. They're doing everything. And they come into the league. They just come in with a chip. Now they come in as they're already stars. They're already making money. Everybody wanted me. And they realize that the guys they were beating in college aren't. This is the NFL. So I think just the mindset of the player you're trying to figure out even more so now than you were before.
Before we get to our Badgers and getting the evaluation from you on that, obviously Green Bay lost Malik Willis. The typical way that Green Bay likes doing it, finding a younger player that you can develop. Is there somebody fifth, sixth, seventh round from the quarterback spot that you think this would be worth taking a flyer on if you're Green Bay?
Well, the guys that could drop down, I mean, where is Cole Payton from North Dakota State going to go? He's a lefty. He's a great athlete. He could be used in packages because he's a heck of a runner, and he's a tough kid. You talk about a hard-nosed football player, Cole Payton is, but he's a one-year starter. So you can get him involved with his running skills and maybe developing. He's got that long delivery, but he was accurate. I mean, this kid completed a high percentage of those passes and did a heck of a job in his 1 year as a starter at North Dakota State. A guy like Luke Altmyer, you know, he goes from Ole Miss to Illinois, does a good job, but he doesn't have, he's drawing comparisons to Brock Purdy, who was Mr. Irrelevant. You know, where does Luke Altmyer fall? He's going to be on day three somewhere there. Cade Klubnik from Clemson had a high grade going into the year and fell all the way into day three. So I'm thinking day three guys will be Klubnik from Clemson, Altmyer from Illinois, and like I said, where does Cole Payton fall? I think he could go as high as the fourth round, but you know, if he gets into the fifth, sixth round, you're going to get something out of him, because athletically, with his speed, his size, 6'3", 230, he can run, he's super athletic, he's incredibly tough. He can be, and people said, Taysom Hill, you can utilize him kind of like that. And does he develop into enough of a passer? He's got that long delivery, but good arm strength. I think he's an interesting guy there. Like I said, Altmyer, if you're looking for maybe that Brock Purdy type, that would be Altmyer from Illinois.
All right, and now we get to Wisconsin. Mason Reiger, you got Riley Malman, Darrell Peterson. Any intel, any info that you have on anybody from Wisconsin that our fans would love to hear about?
Reiger's the one. Mason's got a chance. I mean, when you can play at that level and you can get after the quarterback and you do the job after the season was over, you do everything the right way, I think he's the kind of kid you get into the fourth round area there. We're going to be talking a lot, I think, about him early day three. Mason Reiger can play, and he's going to have a spot on rosters. We've seen, you know, guys, you know, develop. You go back and you look at what we have in the NFL right now. There, you can find, and so well, you get them, you can find some edge rushers slip through the cracks. They just do. And that's been the case. And Wisconsin has that way of, even Watt, when Watt came out, he was a late first-round pick to the Steelers. He didn't go into top 20, top 15. So these guys tend to drop, and we see it. We've seen day three produce. Wisconsin has, and other schools have produced some day three edge rushers. I think Reiger can be another one of those guys somewhere, like saying, that fourth, fifth round area that will be a guy can maybe get you, you know, upwards of 8-10 sacks a year if he's in the right spot.
Speaking with NFL draft GOAT, and no, I'm not going to call him Adam Schefter like maybe some other people may have today, or vice versa, Mel Kiper, who, by the way, Mel, I just want to make sure that you understand how grateful we are that you answered Jesse's call and you joined us after having your hard-earned reputation sullied and besmirched in the not-so-distant past about your evaluation of Tausch and whether
retracted.
He was in your guide or not.
We retracted and gave complete credit after the fact.
But some people are grudge holders, and luckily for us, Mel is not. So thank you, Mel, for that.
Hey, I'm so battered and bruised after 50 years in this business. So nothing. I said today, nothing's going to ever bother me again. And everything that's been said, done over the last 50 years has been pretty amazing. So I've heard and seen it all, guys.
Well, you definitely know more than my postman. So I have a couple more questions for you.
That's debatable.
You don't know my postman. So first of all, you mentioned Ponds, and Tausch and I, obviously, as Big Ten guys, and we saw what he did. He plays for the national champs, but he is not a big dude. So how do you project him in the NFL? Because there is no question that corner is a need. We would love to see him in Green Bay, but as we learned from Ron Wolf many years ago, taking undersized corners is not something the Packers generally want to do. How do you see him playing out in the NFL? And if the Packers took him, would you think that was a smart move at 52 if he's there?
He's one of those guys that you just say, he's just a baller. I mean, he's going to play above and beyond what he is, like I say, from a size standpoint. He's got great instincts and awareness. You saw him get the pick six against Dante Moore in the Oregon game right off the bat, flipped the script right on them immediately, put him behind 7-0 before he could blink. So I think he was at JMU doing the exact same thing. And I said all along, I hope JMU gets some residuals for what Indiana did, because without those JMU kids, Indiana wouldn't be where they are. And Ponds was one of those guys. Surratt was another, and Fisher, I go on and on and on with those JMU kids that were Kalen Black, running back. I mean, that list, I mean, there was 14 of them, seven left. They had seven more this year. So at the end of the day, now they're gone. Now this will be the first year for Sig. Let's see what Sig does without the JMU help, right? But to the Pons point, yeah, no. In the second round with a kid that has his ball skills, his toughness, ran 4.31. He's just a slot corner. These guys are valuable guys. So to me, you got to be physical, and he is. So I look at him as a guy second round. I think if people were thinking third round before he ran at 4.31. That 4.31 put him solidly in round two.
And then the other thing I'm wondering is, obviously you're busy every year getting your board ready and looking at all of that year's prospects. But I went back because the reason the Packers don't have a first-round pick this year or next year is because they acquired Micah Parsons, who in the 2021 draft, despite opting out during the COVID season, was your highest-rated defensive player on your board, if I'm remembering correctly. What do you make of him and what he has become? And when you look at it from the draft perspective, what the Packers gave up to get him, was that capital well spent because of the kind of player he's become?
Yeah, great player. Remember, he had not a ton of sacks because he was playing inside, off ball, and he wasn't on the edge. Now, he had the forced fumbles, and we're trying to compare him to Arvell Reese is being compared to Michael Parsons because he didn't have that many opportunities to get after the quarterback. And, of course, he had the COVID year, which was complicated everything in terms of the evaluation. But for Micah, to be what he is off the edge and be that dominator and that fear factor player that you got to have, making that move made perfect sense, and you could see what was happening before the injury. So to me, Baltimore was going to do the same thing with Max Crosby for the exact same reason. Of course, that trade didn't happen because of the injury with the knee situation with Max, but now Hendrickson's a Raven. So everybody wants those kind of guys. They're closers, they're finishers, and that's what you have to have. And he's elite. He's one of the best in the business. So what you thought he would be, he has been. Unfortunately, Mark knows what better than anything. Football is a game of injuries, and that happens. So, would you say it was a good move? Yeah, a great move to get a player like that. But, again, with all these teams, your core group of stars have to stay healthy. And if they don't, you see what happens. We got one here with Lamar. We got a quarterback here. When he's healthy, when he's not, you see that there. So, again, I don't care. There's a certain number of fear factor players in the league on both sides of the ball. There's not 75 of them. So when you have that group of stars, superstars, and he's one of those, and they're not on the field, then you pay the price. And you saw exactly that happen with Green Bay this year.
All right, two more things so you can get back to your board. One, Tausch asked you about the Wisconsin players, and I have to be honest, in all the years you've joined us, even when you've been having your reputation besmirched, it feels like there's a hell of a lot of Wisconsin players to talk about, and in the last few years, not nearly as many. Is Wisconsin viewed differently, or are their players viewed differently now in the Fickell era vis-a-vis what they were, Alvarez, Bielema, Paul Christ? It just felt like our alma mater was churning out more true blue NFL prospects than we have seen in the last several years.
Well, that's why you see the record the way it is. The record and the leads to the prospects. And you can see when the record, because with Parcells, you are who your record says you are, right? And this is the big year for Fickell and company. When you come in there, and Jim Leonard was the guy, and they went with Fickell instead of Jim, and we know what Jim is. He's a legend in Wisconsin for obvious reasons. Great player, great coach. And you had a mode of operation there. And Camp Randall in Madison, there's a way to win football games. There's a way to recruit those players that can win those football games in Madison for the Wisconsin Badger program. And when you think it, I always worry when I hear people, I'm going to take it to another level. Well, good luck. And the bottom line is, in this year, it's about money anyway. If you get the right players, but you have to have the right, you have to have an identity. And I think that's what they're searching. What's the identity of this football team? We knew what it was at Wisconsin for all those years. For all those, you knew exactly what Wisconsin was. They had their identity. Now you're trying to go a different direction. What's that identity going to be? And this is obviously the schedule. I understand Notre Dame right out of the gate. But look at that schedule. If you can't win 8-9 games with that schedule, there's a problem. I mean, there's a problem. 8 or 9 games should be automatic with Wisconsin with that schedule that they have this year. So and anything less than that, then obviously there's going to be issues. But this, if you talk about a hot seat, there's a reason why Luke Fickell's on a hot seat. You got to produce players. Like I always said, that's when they say Notre Dame, when Lou Holtz said, when you produce first and second round prospects on a high, that means that you've got a team that can compete for playoffs and national title. If you don't, then you're not even close to that. So you can always equate draft choices and how many you have with the success of that team. You just can. So, yeah, sometimes teams overachieve and they get the most out of what they have, even Indiana this year. They got Omar Cooper Jr. is going to be out. Surratt's going to go. These guys are, you know, Indiana's producing. Ponds, they're producing players. You know, you can get by once in a while with overachievers and this and that, but in this day and age with the NIL and all that, you got to have high draft choices. And if you don't, you can see what the record is. And like I say, you are who your record says you are. And for Wisconsin, that record better be this year, like I say, minimum of 8 and hopefully up around 9-10 wins.
All right, Mel, before we let you go, my one disappointment of the draft being in Green Bay last year, because everything else was easier, including I didn't have trouble parking at Lambeau, was that I didn't see you. I was hoping I would get to connect with you. It didn't happen. I am curious what you thought of your experience last year, if you had any disappointments. I don't know if you got to see Tausch and, you know, get after him a little bit or at any point during the time that you were here. But now it's headed to Pittsburgh. It's one of the reasons why it snuck up on us, because we don't have all the buildup here in Green Bay. How was your experience in Green Bay when you were here last year?
One of the best experiences, I'm not just saying this, one of the best experiences we've had since the league took the draft out of New York was Green Bay. It was phenomenal. The people there are incredibly nice and welcoming. The weather cooperated. We had a great time. I came there. I lost my voice when we first got there. I did a Sports Center segment on Wednesday before the draft. Lost my voice completely. Went over. There was a restaurant right by the hotel. People couldn't be nicer. Looking at the pier. People got fishing on the pier. You know, looking at the water. Beautiful. And it got better. Voice came back. Had a great 3 days. Everything was perfect. I couldn't be happy. On a scale of 1 to 10, Green Bay was an 11. Okay, and I would go back there. In fact, everybody was excited. The Ravens were out there. Everybody went out there with my group, my son-in-law, his best friend. We were all out there, and they were all saying to my daughter, "You should have come." But we have a 1-year-old granddaughter, couldn't do it. So yeah, there. Green Bay is now a place. I think to see just be at Lambeau. It's a bucket list thing anyway. To be able to walk around Lambeau, see that was the first time I'd ever been out there. So that was phenomenal for me. I've been to Madison, never to Lambeau for whatever reason. It just never happened. So for me, an 11 or 15, and I hope Pittsburgh can come close to that, because Green Bay and Nashville were the two best experiences for me in terms of outside of like from when we left New York.
Well, Mel, every year it's a great experience for us. We try to bother you only once a year, unless you leave a voicemail after you've been besmirched. We appreciate you so much.
Well, I do have a problem with one thing.
Oh.
I do have a problem. I do have an issue with one thing, that you're only calling me one time out of the year. So that's a little disappointing that I'm only getting one call a year to come on this show.
I don't think you know what you just did, Mel. I don't think you know what you just did. You unleashed Jesse Nelson. We do it with Jeff Passan, and now I've got a hunch it's going to be done with you.
Well, Jesse's really a nice guy. Jesse does a great job, and he says because of that, because of Jesse, I just hope I get more than one call a year to come on this show. That's really, instead, on a scale of 1 to 10 right now, you guys are a minus 11 with just one call. So you got to try to at least get into that plus territory this year, a little plus territory. So let's work on that.
We want like 2, 4, a dozen, like once a week. What are we looking at here, Mel? We can talk.
I'll leave that up to you guys. Like,
right.
Anything more than one will do. How's that?
Mel, we are calling you after the draft is over, after you've decompressed, to tell us what we should think about the Packers draft class, whatever it ends up being. I still think Goody's going to trade back and add some more picks, because he's not going to have a 7-man draft class. Stand by your landline, baby, because we're calling you after the draft at some point.
Well,
you've asked for it.
It only takes me an hour to decompress, so that's it. And
okay.
Give me an hour, and I'm okay.
Because then you got to get your mock draft for 2027 out.
Yeah, not me. I don't get involved with that nonsense. I'll leave it up to Field Yates and my friends. I don't get involved with that stuff. But now, you guys have a great weekend. Enjoy the draft, and go Packers.
All right. That is I can't – the fact that he wants more of us makes me wonder – if we should be worried about him, frankly, because that's awesome. We will be more than happy.
When he started evaluating Jesse, I started wondering about his evaluative skills. Look, if I'm being honest,
it's a great guy.
We're gonna need a pumpkin pie partner endorsing these appearances for Mel when he joins us.